It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Ann Strainchamps. And this week we're bringing you a live show we recorded a couple of weeks ago in Salt Lake City. We've been talking a lot this hour about living dangerously and what that means, about opening yourself to the unknown, physically, but also emotionally and intellectually. And really, what we're circling around is a question of wildness or wilderness. And if you had to pick one writer, just one poet, who has persistently reminded us of the connection between inner and outer landscapes, who has advocated again and again for the preservation of wild places and the importance of national wilderness, it's our next guest. Here's Steve Paulson.
Terry Tempest Williams is a naturalist and activist. She's the author of many celebrated books, including Refuge, Desert Quartet, Finding Beauty in a Broken World, and When Women Were Birds. She has a new book on the way, The Hour of Land, A Personal Topography of America's National Parks. Welcome with me, Terry Tempest Williams. It is wonderful to have you here, and I was looking back at some of our email correspondence when we started to talk about what we might do for this event, and one of the things you said I found kind of astonishing. You said that the most powerful individual in the American West right now might be the sage grouse. And I don't know if that's still true. I know there has been some legal questions about sort of, you know, the sage grouse and its protected status. But what strikes me so much about so much of your writing is how you bring the sage grouse to life, how you bring so much of the wild to life, wild animals. And so I guess maybe we can begin by exploring what it means to encounter wild animals.
Sage grouse. It could be argued that that's the measure of my judgment, but I think it is the story of the American West. This is a bird that understands ritual, that Native people emulated in their dancing. They once numbered 16 million individuals. Today, it's somewhere between 200 and 500,000. And I think they're at risk. And as you know, on September 22nd of this year, our Secretary of Interior, Sally Jewell, said that it was this great win-win situation that the sage grouse did not need protection under the law. And I will tell you personally, Steve, you know, I was so angry when I saw that. And my first reaction was, I'm going to write just this really hard-edged, nasty piece. And then I thought, I don't think that's going to matter. And I thought, what would matter? And I went out to the one lek that I know, which is at the end of the runway in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I went with a friend. We both took our lawn chairs and some champagne, and we found the lek, and we toasted them.
Wow. So why do you need to go out into these wild places, into the wilderness? What does that do for you?
You know, I think I keep thinking it's all about politics. It's these problems that we're facing are political problems, but I actually think that it's not the political crisis that we're facing, but a spiritual one. And so when I have those times with family, with friends, and sage grouse, or prairie dogs, or ravens, and hearing those wing beats, a peace settles in. And there's a beauty.
Does it take you to a deeper contemplative space?
I just think it feels like home. It's quiet. And the world is a noisy place right now. And if we choose to engage with it, it gets very noisy. And so for me, it's a return back to my deeper and higher self. Plus, it's joy.
So do you see wildness more as a place, a physical place, or a state of mind?
Both. I think for so many of us in Utah, wilderness is a place, and we know it by name. But I also do think it's a state of mind. And I think the wild mind is perhaps the most terrifying place of all.
Why is that?
I think there's an inner wildness as well as an outer wildness. And I think if we don't confront the inner wildness with all its terror, then I think we're going to project it outwardly, as we have on wolves. Or if, you know, I keep thinking, why the violence with prairie dog towns? You know, why in parts of this state is, you know, shooting a prairie dog an act of patriotism? I think it has something to do with the inner wildness. And as a writer, it's the most terrifying place I know.
Because you're going to places where, almost by definition, you're leaving your comfort zone.
Not only that, but I don't know if I'm going to find my way out.
Has that happened to you recently?
Yeah. For me, every day I pick up my pencil, I'm faced with my own limitations. You know, I thought this book on national parks would be joyful, it would be easy, it's straightforward, there's no place to hide. You know, I just turned 60. I want to just face what I love the most, public lands. You know, and the way in is through national parks. It has been absolutely the most difficult book I've tried to write.
Really? Why is that?
Because it's a shadowed history, and I didn't want to face that.
The history of Native peoples being displaced so we could have these wonderful parks.
Right, and I've been on the other side of that argument. And I had to face that. I had to face my own racism. I had to face my own privilege. I had to face that there was so much I didn't know.
And it's fascinating to hear you say
terrifying.
That. I mean, you've been writing about these subjects for decades, and you're saying that you writing about national parks, you came onto a subject that you really didn't know that much about?
I knew nothing. And now I know even less, and I'm going to have to be accountable for it. And yet, I feel like I finally found my way in. I'm not a historian. I'm not a scientist. I'm simply a storyteller.
Why was it so important for you to write about the national parks? Well, why did you want to focus your lens on these lands?
I think because there are public commons, and I love national parks so much. I married a park ranger, you know. It's where our family history lies. But I think it's because it's a mirror of America in all of our complexity. It's all the things we don't want to talk about. It's the best of us. It's the worst of us. I don't think it's our best idea. I think it's our evolving idea. I love how our national park ideal is evolving, and that excites me.
And these are also our sacred lands, too.
They are our sacred lands. Thank you for saying that.
Well, and that's, I mean, I'm just thinking back on all that you've written, and especially how you personally gravitate to the lands of Utah, to the desert landscape, and there's a piece of what I get reading you that almost harkens back to those desert mystics from eons ago. Does that make any sense to you?
I just love birds, and I love being out, and I love the changing light. I just love it. And I don't think it's so much a contemplative, although I think the act of writing is. It's where my identity lies. And it's an uncomfortable place to be, you know? It was interesting at the World Parliament of Religions. One of the speakers, Karen Armstrong, she's now focusing on compassion. And what I loved is that she said, compassion is not an emotion. It's an act. But if it were aligned with an emotion, it would be most closely tied to discomfort. And she said, it is so important for all of us at this moment in time to cultivate our discomfort. Because if we allow ourselves to feel that pain, that unrest, that discomfort, then we will act on it, and that becomes an act of compassion. But if we continue to avert our gaze, if we only see our national parks as pleasure parks of privilege, where it's about recreation or retail, concessions rather than, as you say, contemplation, then the world continues to suffer, and we are not engaged in that suffering. And I love that idea. That, to me, was one of the best descriptions of wildness that I know. It's uncomfortable, but it allows us to develop those qualities of attention and gratitude and awe, which I think will serve us now.
One thing that strikes me about this whole conversation we've been having is how full of paradox it is. And so we've been talking about wildness, wilderness, for instance, and yet also you have written so eloquently about the importance of finding home And in some ways, home would seem to be the antithesis of wilderness, but maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I think home for anyone is complicated. It is for me. I grew up in Salt Lake. We left. And this friend of mine said, "You're the only person who thinks you left because you moved 5 hours south, you know, and grieve your home ground." But, you know, Salt Lake will always be my city. Utah is my state. It's the language I speak. But it's not always a safe place. But it's the place I would fight for.
Yeah. You brought something that you've written recently based on a trip that you took. And it would be a gift if you could read this, and maybe you can tell us where it comes from.
Well, I was thinking about, I thought, okay, the assignment is living dangerously. And the most dangerous thing I could do would be to write something new. And we're living dangerously, every single one of us, by our inability to change in a time of climate change. And Brooke and I just recently got back from Kaktovik, Alaska, which is right in the heart of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And this is what I saw. This is what I saw in the village of Kaktovik. Painted houses on the edge of the sea, boats, trucks, snow machines, women, men, and children, sled dogs chained to stakes waiting for snow, caribou skins, wolverine skins, geese, a boneyard of bowhead whale skulls, vertebrae, and ribs, great white bears swimming to shore, great white bears walking toward the boneyard, great white bears standing among bones, licking bones, becoming bones. This is what I saw outside the village of Kaktovik, a snowy owl standing on a tussock, draped in fog, yellow eyes burning. And when the fog lifted, a forest of large white crosses of Inupiaq elders were standing behind her. And behind them, a line of light, the Brooks Range. It was not a mirage. This is what I remember from the village of Kaktovik. 3 gunshots heard at night is a warning. A polar bear is in the village. 3 gunshots heard at night, a polar bear is in the village walking. 3 gunshots heard at night, and I remember looking out the window. I met a woman named Marie. Marie was dancing in the village, twirling, twirling, twirling in the middle of the road in the village. Her family's fishing camp had collapsed into the sea. There is no sanctuary from the rising seas or the warming earth, only the refuge of our own making.
Oh, thank you. So, one final question. We've been talking, our whole show has been about living dangerously. You have brought this home for us. If you have a piece of advice for people listening, what does it mean to live dangerously? What can we take away from this evening that we can think about?
I have no idea.
We'll leave that to you. Thank you so much. Terry Tempest Williams.